They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Crossover NBA Podcast. Glad you could join me. A lot to get to this week before we do. Of course, if you like this podcast, head over to Apple Podcasts, iTunes, subscribe, post a comment, leave a rating, all that good stuff. It's very helpful for us every single week. My guest this week, you heard him here before, Rohan Nadkarni, the SI staff writer. He joins me in studio. What's happening, Rohan?
Not much. I feel like you're extra loud this morning. You got a lot of zest.
I get a lot of energy. You know, it's the end of the weekend. I went snowboarding for a day.
Excuse me, you went snowboarding?
Oh, I'm a snowboarder.
What?
Yes. You didn't know that about me?
I didn't know anyone. I have a lot of questions that we'll have to wait to get to. But you snowboard? Why?
I snowboard. Why not? It's fun. I'm a Northeast born and bred guy. I grew up skiing. I switched to snowboarding about 5 years ago. I have a house up in Vermont.
You don't need to show off about the house in Vermont, first of all.
I love the house in Vermont. It's my little pet project.
Dear Lord. I'm just going to say it. I think you're too old to snowboard. How I feel.
No. I have friends significantly older than me that snowboard.
Does your hair fit in the helmet?
I don't wear a helmet. No, I don't. I wear just a hat. I don't need the helmet. I don't go bombing down the mountain.
Who do you go snowboarding with? I heard you just go snowboarding with some famous friends. That's what
I have no
our producer Lou is telling me.
No, I have no famous friends. I go snowboarding with a handful of my non-famous friends whenever I can get up north, which is infrequently, but I had a couple days off this weekend, so I went up to
Nice. I don't take days off during the season.
Wow.
That's not true. That's a lie.
I'm sorry. Did I see your column on Christmas Day? Did I miss that? Where was that?
Excuse me. Please read my luscious recap of Rockets Thunder.
Rockets Thunder. Okay. There you go. All right. Let's get into it. Big, you know, throughout the rundown Sunday, when I was preparing to talk to you about everything in the NBA, Minnesota, they decided to fire head coach Tom Thibodeau on Sunday right after a double-digit win over the L.A. Lakers, pulling the plug on a 2.5-year run with Tibbs as the head coach and team president. On one hand, Rohan, the Wolves were under 500 and battling through a fairly dysfunctional season. On the other hand, Minnesota is 15-12 since trading Jimmy Butler and only two games out of the playoff mix. And if you really want to get ambitious, they're only 4.5 games out of a top four seed in the Western Conference. So what did you make of the decision, the timing, everything to do with the firing of Tom Thibodeau?
So I think, you know, speaking of columns, you could read my instant reaction to the Tibbs news, because I wasn't on the slopes. I was writing yesterday. But I do think that there's kind of a chorus of agreement right now that the problem in Minnesota is almost, not entirely, but a good portion of it is Glenn Taylor, the owner. I mean, their whole season has been bizarre, right? I mean, it's the problems here are obvious. If Tibbs never seemed long in Minnesota, it always felt like this was going to be his last year. So why not fire him before the Jimmy Butler trade? I think everyone shares that opinion. Why let him make such a franchise-altering move? It wasn't even a bad trade, but was it the best long-term move they could have made? We'll never know. It's just their season has been nonsensical since the whole Jimmy farce, since his whole practice debacle and interview and sit down and all that. It's just been a nonsensical season, and this just continues it, right? You fire him after a 20-point win. I will say, Tibbs, the firing, I wrote for SI before the first Jimmy trade request. You know, this was when the Luol Deng signing was just a mere whisper that somebody needed to stop this guy, right? He wasn't doing a good job as a coach. You know, his defensive magic was all but lost. He wasn't doing a good job as president. He was just relying on Bulls retreats. And now look what happened. I mean, it just was a bad marriage, I think, from the start. It hasn't worked out. But Minnesota's problems aren't fixed now, because as long as Glenn Taylor is there, it seems like they're going to have problems.
Yeah, I agree with that. And Glenn Taylor was kind of the thrust of the column I wrote Monday morning, over at SI.com. Look, a few things here. One, from the beginning, it was very clear that there wasn't a human being on the planet less qualified to hold the team president and head coach role than Tom Thibodeau. He is, in my opinion, still a high-level NBA coach, but he doesn't have the mindset or the temperament or the patience to be an NBA de facto general manager. There's a lot of nuance that goes into that. There's the ability to see the big picture when it comes to trades, and you have to be able to manage up. You have to be able to manage your owner in situations like stuff that happened over the last couple of years. Now, Tom Thibodeau owns the last 2 years of this team. The decision to give Andrew Wiggins full max, that's his. I don't understand, Rohan, why more teams don't utilize restricted free agency as a weapon. You know, how many guys that go into restricted free agency actually wind up signing the one-year tender offer? I can count them on one hand, the number of guys that actually do that. And yet, time after time, teams elect to extend players early to avoid having them go to restricted free agency and run the risk. How different would it be if Andrew Wiggins was headed into restricted free agency or headed into unrestricted free agency or whatever free agency this year instead of having that contract extension in his back pocket? That's number one. So Tibbs owns all of this, the Jimmy Butler stuff, the Andrew Wiggins stuff, the dysfunction within the organization. That's all Tom Thibodeau. But the Minnesota Timberwolves, since Glenn Taylor bought this team in 1994, have done nothing. The Sacramento Kings, which are the picture of ineptitude to most people, have three conference semifinal trips since right around the mid-1990s. Since 1994, Minnesota has had one trip to the conference finals. They have not gotten out of the first round other than that trip to the conference finals in 2004. The Kings have been better. The Phoenix Suns have been better. The Orlando Magic have been better. Just this team has accomplished nothing. And that falls on the owner, who has made one bad move after the other. He cycled through coaches, through general managers. He signed off on the Kevin Garnett deal that brought them nothing. He nickel and dimed Kevin Love. He just hasn't done anything that's made you think that this team is headed in the right direction. The only thing he's done, Rohan, is kept the team in Minnesota. And I guess you deserve the pat on the back for that, because they are still the Minnesota Timberwolves. They might be the Seattle whatever or the Las Vegas whatever. But other than that, there really isn't a lot you could point to and say that the Glenn Taylor era has been a good one for Minnesota.
Yeah, I'm 26 years old. I live in Brooklyn. We have a saying in 2019. It's called "Eat the Rich." Glenn Taylor is kind of like a great example of just how terrible owners are. We need a better way to get rid of owners other than, you know, racist tapes of them leaking, even though we've known they've been racist for a long time. It's disappointing. I mean, you and I could do a much better job of running that team. To your point of restricted free agency, you know, I'm a pro-labor guy, so I don't know exactly how I feel about it, but I do agree. I mean, you look at just a recent example of what happened with the Rockets and Clint Capela this most recent summer. The Rockets let him go into restricted free agency. They were kind of able to get a bargain on that deal. On the other hand, you do have examples like Gordon Hayward, you know, guys who are kind of able to escape it. I do want to push back on one thing you said. You know, I saw a very stiffly hair-gelled reporter tweet last night that Tom Thibodeau might have to become an assistant before he gets a head coaching job again, maybe he's lost some of his luster. I agree. I mean, you said you think he's still a high-level coach. He hasn't shown that to me. I mean, they've been better defensively since trading Jimmy Butler, but you look at their defenses the last 3 years, they're 17th in defensive efficiency right now, bottom 20 mark the last 2 years. That's his calling card. I don't know that Thibodeau has proven to me that he can keep up with the modern NBA. I do think Towns is coming into his own a little bit, but it's interesting. I'm not saying that Wiggins and Towns are on the same level of talent like an Embiid and Simmons, but that is your pair, right? That is your core. You know, you want to build around Wiggins and Towns. That's why you've given them these big money extensions. What did he do to really develop those players, to have them take a leap? You know, is Towns miles, miles better than he was before? I don't know. I think he's certainly an improving player, but I don't know if Thibodeau gets any of that credit. I'm kind of down on him as a head coach right now. And, you know, if maybe I think he has to prove again, you know, kind of that defensive acumen that made him such an attractive candidate in the first place.
I think he's still a high-level coach if all he has to do is focus on coaching. I think the split roles and the responsibilities that came with it, I think that negatively affected Tom Thibodeau, the head coach. I know that Scott Layden ran the day-to-day, but, you know, Tibbs is famously, you know, neurotic about this stuff and has kind of a Larry Brown mindset to him when it comes to player transactions, always looking to make deals to do things to win right away. How else do you explain the fact that he kept Jimmy Butler on the roster when Jimmy Butler was carefully choreographing, you know, his way out over the last few weeks of his time out there? The reason I think he's going to have to be an assistant, and this is what other people around the league have kind of shared with me, is that he's going to have a tough time convincing a management group that you can deal with him. I mean, look at the last two stops that he's had. He was in Chicago, and he had a barely speaking relationship with Garb Foreman and John Paxson at the very end. He goes to Minnesota, and Glenn Taylor and the business side of basketball operations, they wanted nothing to do with him. So, you know, part of landing a job isn't just your coaching acumen. Part of landing a job is your ability to connect to the people that are hiring you, make them want to have you around. And I think for the foreseeable future, that's going to be difficult for Tom Thibodeau. It's not like what it once was in Chicago. He left Chicago, in my opinion, his coaching bona fides were still very much intact. He leaves Minnesota, and it's a completely different situation. He may not need to have to rehab his image on, let's say, Doc Rivers' bench for a couple of years before he gets another shot.
Yeah, I agree. You know, what's funny to me was his Chicago tenure. Talk about teams that really, really overachieved. I mean, no one wanted to play those Bulls teams in the regular season. They were giving you their best every night. I mean, LeBron's first year in Miami, the Bulls were the number one seed in the East that year. I expected him to do something similar with Minnesota. Obviously, they added Butler last year and had a good year up until he got injured, but I've never gotten the sense that his teams in Minnesota overachieved to the extent which they did in Chicago. So I do agree that a little time maybe rehabbing his image will be good for him.
I will say this, though. If Tom Thibodeau kept that job for the rest of the year, I think they make the playoffs. Again, 15-12.
I don't disagree.
Yeah, they had a tough December. I mean, they lost to Atlanta. They lost to Phoenix, but...
But even then, you know, Chris, like his rotations and stuff, I feel like he's not putting his best five on the court. Now, I know like some of that is due to injuries. Teague was out, you know, other guys are missing, but he's not. I don't think he's playing Saric enough. Like, there's still, I like Taj Gibson a lot. I want there to be room for a Taj Gibson type player in the NBA. I just think Tibbs leans on him a little bit too much. I do think if you got like a modern coach in there, I'm just pulling a total name out of my ass right now, but like, Jeff Hornacek, I think he'd do a great job with this Timberwolves team. I think they need to be playing faster. They need to be leaning on their athletes, and I don't think Tibbs is quite ready to do that.
Well, I would say this, and I wrote this last night. Glenn Taylor may fall into a successful situation. I am a big Ryan Saunders fan. I think he's more, you know, people I saw on my Twitter timeline, people screaming nepotism. I mean, give me a break. Ryan Saunders, when Tom Thibodeau took over and there was some uncertainty about whether Ryan Saunders would stay on the staff, teams are going after him. Miami, which is one of the smartest organizations in the NBA, wanted to bring him in as an assistant coach. So Ryan Saunders can coach. He's young. He's in his early 30s, but he's someone that they could wind up, you know, if they make the playoffs, it could turn out that Ryan Saunders could be the guy in Minnesota. Fred Hoiberg, I guess we should talk about that for a second. Fred Hoiberg linked to that job. I don't know whether they like him as a coach or a GM, but Fred Hoiberg right now has been is being recruited by UCLA potentially to be their next head coach. I wonder, and a lot of people I've talked to think it's true, that the timing of this firing is connected to the possibility that Minnesota could lose Fred Hoiberg to UCLA.
I mean, yeah, that's just another sign of the Timberwolves' ineptitude. Frankly, I don't think anyone should be making moves right now based on Fred Hoiberg. I will say this for Hoiberg. I mean, we talked about this when he got let go from the Chicago job. I still think he has potential as a coach. I don't know that I want to throw him in the fire of this team midseason. He makes more sense to me as a front office guy, frankly. I know that he seemed to be a popular candidate for front office jobs when he was already with the Timberwolves in a similar role. So I'm fine if they want to bring him in for the front office. I kind of want to see what Ryan Saunders can do for right now. I think that's kind of a better bet for them moving forward. You have a young team. You have a young coach. See what they can do together before bringing in, you know, a retreat like Hoiberg.
Yeah, that's a pretty good team. I mean, the criticize Tibbs for his deal making all you want, but you know, he got Dario Saric and Robert Covington out of Jimmy Butler. Those are pretty good players that have made an impact on the Timberwolves. So we'll see what happens the rest of the year. Speaking of Jimmy Butler. He is at it again, this time in Philadelphia, after forcing his way out of a situation he didn't like in Minnesota. Butler reportedly has expressed dissatisfaction with his role in the 76ers offense. ESPN reported last week that Butler got into it with Brett Brown during a recent film session. Butler's numbers, Rohan, have dipped since coming to Philadelphia. Joel Embiid has expressed his frustration with his role in the offense since the trade. Philadelphia is 16-8 since acquiring Butler. So, Brett Brown says the Butler report is much ado about nothing. What say you?
It's very interesting. There's so many layers to this. First and foremost, the Sixers are maybe the biggest red flag warning sign for any team heading into this summer with cap space. Everyone is looking at the 2019 free agency as their chance to reload. The Sixers are a prime example of what happens. You know, the allure of cap space. The Sixers had all this flexibility in 2018. They weren't able to sign a star. They have to trade two very useful players in Saric and Covington for a superstar player who's going to be on the wrong side of 30 soon. And now they're seeing how tricky it can be, how fragile it can be to build a contender. The Sixers are obviously still very, very good. Their floor is higher than most teams' ceilings. The problem is, how do they match up against the best teams? And we saw what happened when they played Boston. Their offense just kind of bogs down when the games gets tight. I don't think it's a coincidence that soon after this report came out, Ben Simmons just started launching mid-range jumpers. The biggest issue Philly has, and it's obvious, is when their three best players share the court, the fit is just uncomfortable. Simmons has to have the ball in his hands because unless he's screening, you know, on almost every play, he's just a liability to have on offense. I mean, teams can sag off on him. Butler wants the ball in his hands because he wants to play, you know, a spread pick and roll type, which makes sense. He can succeed in that. While at the same time, Embiid needs touches. I mean, he's such a mismatch. I just don't see how they figure it out. I never loved this trade for them. I understand that at some point you have to act. At some point you have to go get good players. But I'm with Jimmy. I do think the fit, you know, doesn't really make sense. I do think that they aren't necessarily maximizing him. Obviously, you want a talent like that on your roster, but I don't see how you get the best out of all three of those players when they're playing together.
The danger that Philadelphia faces to me is that in the next few years, you know, forget this season, they're not a championship team this season, but the next few years, assuming they pay Butler what he wants, that 5-year full max, they could turn into kind of a souped up version of the Washington Wizards, where they are they're just landlocked by three major contracts and a team that has a ceiling that's short of a championship. Now, there are natural ways that the Sixers can get better. If Ben Simmons makes a commitment to becoming a perimeter shooter, his improvement alone could take them to a different level. But as long as Ben Simmons is a liability from anywhere outside 15 feet, I agree with you. They're going to have a hard time keeping Simmons, Embiid, and Butler on the floor together in the fourth quarter because teams, especially in the playoffs, are really going to scheme against that. And they're going to find ways to make you force Simmons to be a shooter, to make you force whoever else may be. Let's say it's TJ McConnell or somebody, whoever else is out there on the floor, to beat you from the outside. And I don't know how that's going to be effective. I mean, Embiid is great. Simmons is a tremendous point guard weapon. Butler is great in the fourth quarter. But they're just going to have problems creating offense when there's not enough spacing out there. And without Simmons showing drastic improvement, I don't know how that happens organically. I mean, I guess they could get lucky and draft guys in the second round and, you know, land their version of Draymond Green and guys like that. But short of that, I'm not sure how this team becomes a championship team with this group.
Another issue is they now lack the depth that they had last year to kind of prop some of these guys up. The irony in all of this is if they still had Saric and Covington, let's say Jimmy Butler was a free agent last summer, or they had signed Paul George and they were able to put out Butler, you know, or whatever superstar, Simmons, Embiid, and then Saric and Covington, those are exactly the type of players who help you mask deficiencies in a lineup like this because they can shoot, because they can do multiple things on offense on the floor. They also just lack the depth right now or the shooting, frankly, you know, on the rest of their roster to kind of mask some of these issues. So they're in a trickier spot than I think most people realize. It helps, obviously, greatly to already have three immense talents on your team. I would bet on them figuring it out, if only because those players are so good. You know, I'm definitely getting ahead of myself. I want to see, I've always wanted to see Embiid with a team of his own, but I'm not sure that I'm ready to go souped up Wizards version just yet. I still think they, if they make the right moves on the margins, they can make the finals with this core. I still believe that if they can get enough shooting around these guys. Obviously, Redick is a great player, but they kind of, they have a little bit of a 3-and-D hole right now with Covington gone. But I think for now, what Philly needs to do, because it's really their only option, they're kind of locked in to this Butler situation. I don't think it's going to be a good look for them if they let him walk this summer and then they're playing the free agency game again. What they need to do is nail their moves on the margins and bring in kind of the right flexible multiple action guys around them to make this work.
Well, look, two things. One, you're right. You make moves around the margins, that's a game changer. I mean, but it's extremely difficult to make those moves, and to, especially when it comes to the draft. I mean, we'll talk about the Raptors in a second, but one of the reasons they're good is Pascal Siakam can play. OG Anunoby can play. Fred VanVleet can play. These are late first, second round, undrafted players that make an impact on that team. That's where Elton Brand, you know, has to hit. I'm not so sure that, you know, if this doesn't work out, if they get beat in the first round, or it looks like that really doesn't work with Butler, I'm not so sure that letting him walk isn't the worst thing to do. How many times have we looked at teams and say, oh God, you signed up to that contract, and in year one, that contract looks like a debacle. I mean, the Wizards we just talked about, whether it's John Wall or Otto Porter, I mean, they'd love to get off those contracts right now. Contracts I don't think anybody really blinked at a couple of years ago when they were, well, 2 years ago when Wall was signed, and last year when Otto Porter was inked up. If it doesn't work, the last thing you want is Jimmy Butler on a five-year deal, a guy that's going to be, as you said, on the wrong side of 30 when this deal starts, a five-year deal where at some point anyway, you're guaranteed to be paying for past performance. Maybe just walking away is the better way to go. I know you're tied up anyway with Embiid and Simmons on max-level contracts down the line, but sometimes, what's that phrase, discretion's the better form of valor. Does that fit in this circumstance? Like, just saying, you know, well, listen, we're going to pass. We're going to try to build a different way.
I certainly don't disagree, and ESPN reported that, you know, teams around the league believe Butler is going to take meetings. I don't think they need to jump out and right away offer Jimmy the full five-year max. I'm completely with you on that. Maybe you offer him a year less and let him get competing deals, and if he takes one, so be it. Why I think the Sixers won't do that is because they just got burned, right? They just got burned on chasing a superstar this summer. You know, they were in play for Kawhi. They were in play for Paul George. And, you know, they ended up with no one, right? They ended up bringing back J.J. Redick and trading for Wilson Chandler. Flexibility is great. I think every team craves flexibility in the NBA. A lot of teams are going to have big cap space next summer. That's good. The problem is the Sixers now know better than anyone how awkward it can be, how tough it can be when you strike out. I'm with you. I don't think in a vacuum letting Butler walk is an awful decision. I don't think it's, you know, a slam door, shut door, whatever the phrase is, to bring him back. The issue is if you don't, and then you don't sign a superstar, then what happens? Do you keep kind of playing the flexibility game? When do you decide to lock in on a core that's going to be your championship core?
Yeah. All right, let's talk about another player that has an interesting offseason ahead of him. Kawhi Leonard, he made his return to San Antonio last week. Kawhi was roundly booed and heckled by Spurs fans, which was to be expected. He then blamed the media for it, which frankly was not. Big picture, though, Rohan, the trade for Leonard has been a short-term success for Toronto. They have the most wins in the NBA. They lead the Eastern Conference, and they've done it with Kyle Lowry, Serge Ibaka, battling through different types of injuries. I guess the first question here is, short-term, when you look at this Raptors team, are they a better team than the one you saw a year ago?
Oh, without a doubt. That's a clear-cut answer to me. Siakam's taken a big step forward. They have a lot of depth. Kawhi is a flat-out better player than DeMar DeRozan. Danny Green is going to be incredibly useful for them come playoff time. I mean, they're much better. And there's so much working in their favor right now. I wrote last year, I remember thinking, this is the year the Raptors have to make the finals, right? I mean, that Cavs team was historically bad on defense. If they didn't make the finals last year, it would have been a joke. And it was a joke. I mean, they got swept. They made all these changes for a reason. I think they were completely justifiable. Not only are they a much better team now LeBron is gone. So I think the pressure is back on them. They're definitely a better team. To me, this is their year. I mean, if they have to kind of make the finals this year, with obviously the Kawhi decision looming over them, but they're without a doubt a better team.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, DeRozan, terrific player, but I think there was a ceiling for that team. And when you watch Kawhi, there's almost nothing he can't do. I mean, he's, you know, defensively, he can guard five positions. I was talking to Nate McMillan about this, and he reminded me that when he was watching film, he saw Kawhi defending, you know, Nikola Jokic. You know, the guy can just do it at all five spots. And offensively, he's one of the most efficient players I've ever seen. Like, there's not a lot of wasted dribbles, wasted motion with Kawhi Leonard. And he's proven that from the three-point line in, he's dangerous. So with that type of player at the helm of your team, you're just better. And if the Raptors get home court advantage in that environment, and it's a great arena up there, Scotiabank Arena, they've been sold out really since 2013, they're going to be tough to beat on their home floor. Now, will that be enough to get Kawhi Leonard back? I spent some time the last couple of weeks in Toronto kind of investigating this very question for a story that's going to run at some point in the magazine. And, you know, I still don't really know, Rowan. I still don't know if I have a full grasp on this. It sounds like winning means a lot to Kawhi Leonard, but what looms over this is, does weather mean something to Kawhi? Does his brand mean something to him? What about the influence from the people in his circle? His uncle, Dennis Robertson, his agent, Mitch Frankel. I mean, where are they pushing him, and does their opinion actually matter? What chance do you give the Raptors of retaining Kawhi Leonard?
So this is very interesting. I mean, obviously you were just there. You did the reporting. You have a much better idea of this than I do. As someone who is probably moving to Los Angeles, I understand, you know, the allure of it for Kawhi. This is what I'll say to the winning point. Kawhi Leonard, to me, is probably the most forgotten finals MVP playing in the NBA right now. I mean, this guy went toe-to-toe with LeBron in a playoff series, bested him, won finals MVP, you know, dunked Mike Miller out of the NBA pretty much. This guy knows what it's like to play at the highest level and succeed at the highest level. I mean, you remember that video, 2013, Kawhi checking into a game and LeBron kind of muttering under his breath that he was upset. This guy has, from his rookie year, played with no fear, has experienced, you know, great success. Why should he prioritize winning if that's the case? I mean, if he's satisfied with his accomplishments, and it's not like he would be choosing between, you know, winning and losing. I think if he did move to, say, Los Angeles, the Clippers are going to be a very intriguing option. They give Kawhi the possibility of teaming up with another star. Obviously, Steve Ballmer has his grand master plan of signing Kawhi Leonard and Kevin Durant, which everyone in the world wants to do. But I don't think he necessarily has to prioritize winning if he's choosing between the Raptors and LA. I think he's going to have multiple options to win this summer. And if that's the case, I think Toronto has an equal chance of keeping him, if that makes sense. I don't think Toronto is going to be at a disadvantage, but I don't think just because they had him for a year, they're necessarily going to be at a clear advantage. I think making the finals would help Toronto's case greatly. If they you know, drop out before then, I think that it's going to be, you know, kind of a 50-50 shot.
Couple things the Raptors organically have working for them. Number one, and this is sort of straight out of the Paul George Oklahoma City blueprint, they acquired the guy. And you can't underestimate the impact on a player when a team goes out there and rolls the dice, says, you're worth it. We believe that you're worth risking the future of our franchise to go out there and get, even with the possibility, maybe even the probability, that you'll walk at the end of the season. I think that had an impact on Paul George, and I think it could have an impact on Kawhi Leonard. The other thing that was kind of explained to me was that in being in Toronto now, and this is, again, the same thing that Paul George experienced, Kawhi Leonard can see how that franchise deals with adversity. For example, Kyle Lowry goes out for most of the last couple of weeks. That's a level of adversity. In steps Fred VanVleet, who is a terrific player and probably the point guard of the future in Toronto. In steps Pascal Siakam in a bigger role. They make shots, and the Raptors do not miss a beat. Last year, Paul George got a front row seat to how the Thunder handled adversity, from the Carmelo stuff early on to the midseason loss of Andre Roberson to the first round exit And the Thunder, and Paul George told me this, the Thunder, the way the Thunder handled it, you know, all 15 guys on the same page, the front office on the same page as the head coach, that resonated with him. So the Raptors have a chance to show Kawhi exactly how they handle adversity. If Kawhi sees that as a positive, that could be influential. What we don't know yet is the connection that Kawhi Leonard is going to make with Kyle Lowry. There was obviously a tremendous connection with Russell Westbrook and Paul George. And Russell Westbrook, at a minimum, understood his role as a recruiter in that situation. I don't get the sense that Kyle Lowry is really invested in that. I think Kyle Lowry would, sure, love it if Kawhi Leonard is staying, but I don't know yet, and I don't think he is, sort of taking on that recruiter role and seeking out maybe the connection you need to make it more palatable for Kawhi Leonard to stay.
Listen, this is me reading into this too much, but Kawhi definitely didn't look pleased when Kyle and DeMar were chatting during that Spurs-Raptors game. Like, he walked over to it kind of like, what's going on here, man? I do agree. Like, every time I watch a Raptors game and Kawhi's walking back to the bench, I'm like, who's giving him the first high five? Is he smiling? Do guys seem excited to dap him up after a big play? I'm very fascinated in all these aspects. I will say, you know, to your point, he'll know a lot more about the Raptors than he can learn in any free agency pitch, right? You know, the Clippers could put together the best pitch in the world for Kawhi Leonard, you know, maybe even show his jersey hanging up in the Raptors like they did with Blake Griffin. But but he'll still know more about the Raptors. And I do think sometimes that fear of the unknown, you know, could certainly play a role in this.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, look, it's all tea leaf reading, and when I talk to Raptors executives and officials, they refuse to do too much tea leaf reading. Their focus right now is winning. And if they do win, if they do get to the NBA Finals, that may be enough. That may be enough. And you have to think, too, it's the Eastern Conference. I mean, Kawhi Leonard stays in the Eastern Conference. He has a chance to be 1-1A best player in that conference. He goes west. Where does he rank? I mean, LeBron's out there for the foreseeable future. KD, for now, is out there. Steph Curry is still going to be out there. So maybe that factors in. We just don't know what all the variables are going to be. All right,
Are you going to write the Luke Wall versus Lee Jenkins story? Luke Wynn versus Lee Jenkins story.
Yes, it is. That's what it really boils down to. Two ex-SI writers battling it out for the love of Kawhi Leonard.
Oh, that's going to be fun. I hope Jenkins gets in the pitch meeting. That'll be fun.
There it is. Yeah. Let me finish with this. So right now, as we speak, there are about 25 NBA teams that consider themselves in the playoff mix, Eastern and Western Conference. There's a lot of parity when it comes to fighting for playoff spots this year, which is great for the NBA. They love it. It keeps so many cities engaged, and it's a good look for the league as they head into the second half of the season. At the same time, there are five teams: Atlanta, New York, Chicago, Cleveland, and Phoenix, that are in a race for the bottom, let's call it right now. So you have 25 teams fighting for the playoffs and five with no interest and no ability and really just in a dogfight to get that worst record in the NBA. My sense on this, Rohan, is that this is a problem for the NBA. They rejiggered the lottery. They made changes. They flattened some of the odds in those top four. And I think they thought that would prevent stuff like this from happening. Instead, you don't just have one team, like Philadelphia's been that team for in recent years. You have five that are right now in a free fall and happy to be in that free fall going to the bottom. Do you think the NBA's tanking problem is any better or worse than it's been in years past?
I don't think so. I like this mix right now. I think that there's a lot of competition to get into the playoffs in both conferences. And at the same time, there's an appropriate number of teams tanking. What benefit would it be to any of the tanking teams you mentioned to try to make the playoffs? What would any of those teams get from a first round, you know, shellacking at the hands of the top seeds in their conference? I don't think Atlanta would gain anything from that. I don't think they're...
Oh, Miami would disagree.
Miami, that's a much different situation. I mean, they got money tied into guys. I mean, they have prospects who are kind of later in the end of those development years that I just think that's a
different... But that's their philosophy. Like, Miami's philosophy is win at all costs.
And a lot of national guys right now think that they have the bleakest outlook in the league.
Sure.
You know, so I think that there's no real benefit to those teams that are tanking right now to try to make the playoffs. They're not doing it as shamelessly as, you know, the Sixers of yore by just churning through guys who clearly don't belong in the NBA. I will say, if there's one team that I'm like, it's getting a little late in the process to be tanking, it's Phoenix. You know, at what point are you going to put together a competent team there? But, you know, you look at teams like the Kings, as inept as their ownership has been, as goofy as the front office has been, they've taken a step this year, right? They tanked, they got De'Aaron Fox, they have some interesting prospects, Marvin Bagley, Harry Giles, and now you kind of see them taking a step forward. So I don't think any of the teams you mentioned have anything to gain by being anything better than what they are. And 25 teams who have a realistic shot at competing to get into the playoffs, I think that's a good number. That's better than most years. I personally don't see a need for more than that. To me, unless we're ready to talk about a complete overhaul, and maybe that means eliminating a draft completely, we can start about tanking. But as long as this is the system, then I think that this is the best you could hope for.
I think what the NBA needs to have happen come lottery time is for, like, the Washington Wizards to get the number one overall pick. To have these four teams all miss out on, you know, bottom four lottery slots. They need evidence that this lottery system is in fact a deterrent for tanking. Because I'm not sure right now teams really believe it. I think that they understand the lottery odds have changed and that could make it more difficult to land one of those top four picks, but as of now, they still look at losing as the best philosophy and the best chance to ultimately get better. So I think they need to have kind of a reality check, you know, come lottery time, where you see teams like, I don't know, the Wizards or the Sacramento Kings or whoever else is just barely on the outside looking in, getting one of those top slots in the lottery. I think until then, none of this is going to change, and we're going to have to deal with tanking like this every single year.
Yeah, to be honest, it doesn't offend me or bother me as much as it does some people.
Yeah, but will it offend you in, you know, will it offend you in April when, you know, teams are, there's three teams battling for that eighth spot, and one of those three teams gets Chicago or Cleveland?
No, because those teams have sucked all year long, and, you know, the Heat have played the Hawks three times in the first few months of the season. The Hawks have sucked since day one, and the Heat have lost to them three times. So there's no excuse. I mean, you get your every team in the league gets their chances against bad teams. I don't really care for how much for that argument.
Yeah, but the teams,
because then you start
worse.
getting into oh, but you played this team when this guy was hurt, whatever.
Unless, yeah, but the teams get worse. The teams at the end of the season, as motivated as a Sacramento or a Washington or whomever is going to be to win a game, the teams they're playing might be equally as motivated to lose a game. We could see another Manute Bol shooting 8 three-pointers. At the end of the game.
I mean, that's the nature of the NBA. It's not a new problem. Unless, again, like I said, unless you're ready to talk drastic overhaul, maybe you give every team except the top eight equal chances at the lottery. I personally believe that there shouldn't be a draft, and, you know, players coming in should be able to sign with whoever's the most cap space. I'm ready to talk drastic overhaul.
Oh, that's if just you want. Bonkers. Everybody goes to that's LA Laker. Let's play with LeBron. Let's go.
Don't think that's going to happen. I think guys are going to go where their money is.
A lot of go to Minnesota, right? That's
if Minnesota offered Ben Simmons $20 million when he was coming out of college for two or three years, I think he would have done that.
But that's what gets you into, like, the Chandler Parsons situation. We have to overpay for these guys.
Listen,
if you're in a small market.
Chris, there's no perfect solution. Is you're getting to my point here. There's no perfect solution. There's risks and rewards to every system. I'm personally fine with it. Like I said, tell me the perfect answer that works other than a team on the fringe getting lucky. I agree. It'd be great if the Kings won the lottery and whatever, the Suns looked stupid for tanking yet again. That would be hilarious. I'm for that. But other than hoping for a karmic result, I think you can only talk drastic overhauls. And unfortunately, you're not ready to have that conversation yet.
Look, no, because I don't think a drastic overhaul, I don't think the Mike Zarin wheel is going to work. So
you're telling me you wouldn't watch a 15-minute primetime special where Adam Silver has to spin a wheel.
I mean, there's a lot of things I would watch. I go on YouTube and watch, like, cats fighting. Like, it doesn't...
What?
I mean...
First snowboarding, now cats fighting?
Whatever.
Who are you?
I watched that stupid karaoke show that James Corden does too on
YouTube. Oh my God, you're the reason that kind of stuff exists.
Yes, I am.
Oh,
God. The point is, there's not a lot that I won't be. You're tantalized by a car crash too. That doesn't mean you want to see one. The only thing I've advocated for this before, the NBA should take more license in penalizing teams that are egregiously tanking. Now, maybe you don't see that right now. But if there's and the NBA started to do this where they went after teams for sitting guys
Spurs,
on the second end of back to back games. If you see a team egregiously trying to tank, fine them $1 million.
Why?
And then it'll stop. That's why, because owners, as rich as they are not going to allow their teams to get fined $1 million for losing a game. It's just not going to happen. They're cheap. And no matter how much money they have, they will not allow that to happen.
Why does it matter to you so much that the Cleveland Cavaliers try hard in an April regular season game?
Because
do you have a gamble? Is it a gambling thing? Are you gambling too much?
I wouldn't even know how to gamble in this stuff. But it's for what's at stake. If the Cleveland Cavaliers are playing the
Cavaliers suck now. Beat them now when you have the chance.
Okay,
they're still
right
just
now,
as bad.
But right now they're trying. Like right now they have no talent, but they're trying.
But here's the thing. They're not going to have talent in April either. Okay, we agree on that. I agree that I think teams tank on an organizational level. Maybe they'll hold out Kevin Love for an extra month than they need to. Here's what I'll say.
Kevin Love's not coming back.
Sure.
Kevin Love, the ambiguous press release that the Cavs put out. Like, Kevin Love's making progress. We'll see him next year.
Here's my point. When the ball is tipped, those players on the floor are trying. They're not trying to lose. They're not missing shots on purpose. They might all be bad players, but they're trying.
Correct. But if you don't, it's more about putting the guys, like if you bench three or four veterans, like the handful of veterans the Cavs have. If Tristan Thompson, let's say, for example,
gets the Eric Bledsoe Memorial, rest.
Look, if Tristan Thompson and Colin Sexton sit out the season finale,
they're not
against
sitting
Charlotte.
Colin Sexton. They're not sitting.
I'm
Colin
just saying,
Sexton.
But if they sit out, well, they would if they were trying to lose a game or ensure they're going to lose a game. If Colin Sexton and Tristan Thompson sit out the season finale against Charlotte, and let's say Detroit sitting in that 9 spot has to play Miami, which relentlessly pursues wins every time, how is that fair? How is that a good thing?
It's the nature of the league. It's not. It's not a fairness argument. It's just. Every team knows that exists, every team that knows that it's a possibility. And if that's the case, if you're Detroit, beat the Cavs now when they're also bad. They're not magically going to get, they're going to be trying just as hard as on the floor in a December game as they are in an April
game.
It's
not about trying. It's about who's playing. That's my issue. If it's just the shitty team in Cleveland, that's fine. If it's the shitty team in Cleveland minus two of its best players, that's a problem. For that, hit them in the pocketbook. See if they keep doing it.
All right. Like I said, you had a lot of energy this morning, a lot of zing.
I always have a lot of energy. All right, before I let you go, this wasn't on the rundown, but it came across mind as we finished. Chandler Parsons is now, back in Los Angeles.
Yes, that's right.
Just last week, my New Year's resolution for the Memphis Grizzlies was a healthy Chandler Parsons. Chandler Parsons says he's healthy. There was a report that Parsons was yelling at Chris Wallace during a 5-on-5 scrimmage to let him play. Chandler Parsons is obviously one of the biggest contract busts in recent memory, is barely played since signing that mega max deal with Memphis a couple of years ago. Now the Grizzlies are sending him home with no real plans to put him back into the rotation. What do you make of all this, Rohan?
I wonder if Chandler Parsons is just, signed this contract and was like, hey, I'll sit this out for 4 years until I can start partying with Mark Cuban again. It is weird to me. It sounded like from that ESPN report that teammates were looking forward to playing with him again. Again, I do think if healthy, he could be a useful piece. At the same time, I see the organization's point of view. Listen, if this guy plays and he's likely to get hurt again, which at this point we have no reason to believe he can stay healthy, and he gets hurt again, there's nothing they can do, right? That they can't somehow find a way to trade him in the summer when he's an expiring deal. I don't blame the organization. I think at this point, we've talked about it with so many guys, cut your losses. Just know when a guy doesn't have it and cut your losses. I think the Grizzlies need to cut their losses. Maybe he's even good somewhere else, but it just hasn't worked out for them. Maybe you stretch provision, you find a way to get rid of him, but it just hasn't worked out. Stop stop chasing. You know what? There's only so far this can go. What is he going to dramatically change your ceiling when he plays anyway? I don't know. The Grizzlies have been on a slide as of late anyway. I just think they got to cut their losses.
Cut their losses?
Are you kidding me? You last week you were just telling me how the Wizards should trade Otto Porter for a second round pick. You were just talking. You made the cut your losses argument last week. So let me hear your answer right now.
Well, because the Wizards are going nowhere, they need to move off that contract so they can rebuild. The Memphis Grizzlies are in the playoff mix right now.
But they've lost a lot recently.
Chandler, they have. And why have they lost some of those games? So they can't score for the life of them. Chandler Parsons, theoretically, is a guy that could come in and provide offense. He won a starting job coming out of training camp. He got injured. And for whatever reason, there's a disconnect between the Grizzlies and Chandler
Parsons. Because he's been hurt, and he's been awful this entire time.
Well, he's not hurt now.
I don't know if you spent too much time at the club with Parsons and Mark Cuban, too.
Yeah. Listen, Manhattan Beach, just hanging out.
Listen, if you want to talk about a team that needs a rebuild, the Grizzlies need a rebuild as well, okay? This core is maxed out, and I love the Grizzlies. The core is maxed out. They finally have a good prospect in Jaren Jackson Jr.
Hold on. You're making two separate arguments here. The first argument is, what are you going to do now? You're not going to trade Marc Gasol at this point. You're not going to trade Mike Conley at this point. You're trying to win. You're trying to make the playoffs. They are one of the 25 teams I just referenced that are trying to make the playoffs. Chandler Parsons is healthy. You can't trade Chandler Parsons right now. You just talked about stretching his contract. Fine. You can do that anyway. If he gets hurt, you can stretch the contract regardless. What is the downside to trying to bring him back and coming to some kind of G League resolution with him that brings him back into the mix sometime in late January, early February?
Because maybe he gets hurt again and becomes untradeable or something like
that. He's not tradable now. I mean, come on. That $25 million expiring contract for a guy that can't play, it's not tradable. I don't see it.
Even if it is,
I see a far bigger upside to playing the guy and see if he can stay healthy. Because you know what? If it turns out he can play, then his trade value goes even higher. A guy that can play and give you 15 points per game on an expiring $25 million contract, that guy's valuable.
Listen, I just don't think they're going in the right direction. I think they had a hot start, but I think the last couple months, 6 weeks, have kind of revealed who this team is. I think
they can't score.
Yeah, and I don't think Chandler Parsons is the answer to that. I don't think a guy who hasn't played basketball in 2 years is going to all of a sudden magically lift their offense up to be some. Why is Chandler Parsons all of a sudden your guy who's going to like transform them into some scoring machine? Like, give me a break. I don't think all of a sudden, like, if he's playing 15 minutes a night, they're all of a sudden going to be a high scoring, high powered attack. I think they need to refocus. They need to figure out how to build a best team around Jaren Jackson Jr. I don't think that means trotting out Chandler Parsons to be their offensive savior. I think that they should cut their loss with that contract. I know you're saying you can't trade Gasol and Conley now, but I would listen to offers for them and see what we can do because they need to retool for the future, not get locked into more veteran guys when they finally, as you like to proclaim every time we do this podcast, they finally hit on a draft pick. Now don't mess it up by keeping your overpriced veterans. Figure out a way to build a core around Jaren Jackson.
Because the 15 minutes a game you're going to get from Chandler Parsons might be better than the 15 you're getting from Shelvin Mack or Jamichael Green or whomever else. He's certainly going to provide a jolt to your offense.
I haven't seen him play. I haven't seen him play more than 4 minutes of basketball God knows how long it's been now.
Well, he did play briefly this season, and granted, he has been.
He's going to get hurt. He's going to get hurt again if he plays.
Then you deal with sending him home. How is that the issue?
They just need to move on, man. They just need to move on. It's time for them and you to let go.
Let's just send Chandler Parsons a $38 million.
I don't know if this is some weird, like, you see your younger self in Chandler Parsons or something
Look, they have no ability to improve via trade. None. They can't make a deal that's going to make them markedly better. Chandler Parsons, at one point, was a very good player and is a guy capable of giving you offense. Looks like he's healthy. Going through 5-on-5 drills, looks like he's healthy. Why not bring him back? Roll the dice, see what you can do.
Because I don't think their focus should be making the playoffs. I think their focus should be building a good team around Jaren Jackson.
That's impossible. It's impossible to do that. You can't just tank away with that roster with Conley and Gasol.
Hey,
they'll never be bad enough.
They did it last year.
That's because Conley played 12 games.
I know, but I'm just saying they're losing again already. They're already sliding back.
They're losing. They're still in the 500 range.
They're being naturally selected for the lottery, Chris. Just let it happen.
That's fine. But Chandler Parsons can beat back against natural selection.
Oh,
that's
God.
All right.
I need to find out your Chandler Parsons connection.
I'm just a Memphis fan. I like the Grindhouse.
Okay.
I like Gasol and Conley. Conley's one of the best guys in the league.
I'd rather see them bring back Tony Allen and Zach Randolph.
There's Tony Allen. Zach Randolph might be available at some point in the next month.
I hope so.
All right, Rohan. Always appreciate your time, man. Great stuff, and we'll talk again next week.
Sounds good, man.
All right, that's it for this week's episode. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it, and I'll see you next week.